You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. A story in the news about a elementary public school in San Diego. A case was brought before the court saying that because these elementary school kids were being taught yoga, they were also being taught the religious ideas, the religious doctrines that are often attached in the practice of yoga, in particular to Hinduism. The judge said, no, not so. And so the kids in San Diego, at least in this one school district, are able to learn yoga as part of an exercise and health program. Joining us to talk about that story and the worldview of yoga, Elliot Miller. He's editor-in-chief of the Christian Research Journal and author of a series on yoga for the Christian Research Journal. Elliot, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, Todd.
The superintendent of schools there in that district near San Diego, Tim Baird, says that the program wherein the kids are being taught yoga is worthwhile for teaching healthy exercise, eating habits. He hopes that teaching yoga to students will decrease instances of fighting and bullying. Quote, we're not instructing anyone in religious dogma. Yoga is very mainstream. How do you respond?
Well, I was involved in a similar dispute back in the 1980s in the ABC school district in Cerritos, California, where they were trying to bring yoga into the school district, and several concerned parents contacted the Christian Research Institute. And so I came to the school board meeting, and I and several parents made our case, and it was a well-researched and well-thought-out presentation on the religious nature of yoga. And as a result of this, at that time, the ABC school district ruled against including yoga in the school. And but I did foresee then, and I certainly can see now, that this is just an ongoing battle. I would completely disagree with the superintendent there regarding that, because what you need to understand about religion is not all religions are the same. In the West, we have dogmatic religions, such as Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, which teach a set of doctrines that you have to go through catechism. You have to be taught these doctrines and consciously embrace them and accept them in order to enter into the religious experience and community. But this is not the case with Eastern religions. Eastern religions, basically, especially every form of Hinduism, is centered around a practical, even they would use the term scientific system, of practices that prepare you for religious conversion and immersion into the Hindu belief system, spirituality, and community. And that system is called yoga. And it is very much involved with physical postures, breathing exercises, meditation practices, and various rituals that affirm your religious devotion. And every form of yoga that I have ever seen qualifies as an initiation ceremony and ritual and practice into Hinduism. And it's very effective how it works, because with these Eastern religions, you don't need to embrace a set of doctrines ahead of time. In fact, somebody can tell you, this will just improve your health. This will relieve your blood pressure. This will give you peace of mind. This will tap your creative resources. In other words, they can give you a physical, temporal, secular reason for doing it. And this is exactly how Hinduism has been sold and sewn into the fabric of our culture. And it gives it an advantage evangelistic advantage over Christianity, because Christianity is barred at the gate because it's a dogmatic religion where you have to accept certain doctrines to become a member. But you still get initiated into Hinduism through yoga. That's why so many people that start out practicing yoga for health reasons end up converting to Hinduism or some form of New Age or occult or Eastern religious practice. And in any case, whether that's the end result of somebody's using it or not, they're being exposed to both religious and spiritual influences that are beyond their ability to detect, that do influence them. And for any Christian to participate in yoga, it should be an outright conflict in terms of the violation of God's prohibition of participating in any unbiblical religious systems, because that is exactly what yoga is. It's a religious system.
So are you saying that it's not just that there are certain postures, movements, kind of physical aspects to this that are incidental to the belief system, but these things both grow out of and aim back toward that belief system? As sparse as it is, Hinduism is pretty sparse in its beliefs. I mean,
right.
What it actually
believes.
You're right
about that. You're right about that. It is sparse in its beliefs. Not that they don't have a lot of beliefs, just that there's great latitude within the overall religion of Hinduism for different beliefs. In fact, I've only identified two commonalities to every form of Hinduism, and I've studied it at great length over a period of many decades. And that is, one, some form of belief in karma and reincarnation, and two, some practice of yoga. And so, yeah, it's very sparse. However, it is a religious identification, and you are absolutely right that it both comes out of and leads back into that religious community and experience. You can't practice yoga, you can't identify yourself with that practice without putting yourself in a religious context. That context existed before you did. It's large. And you can't just come in and do a few postures and think you're going to escape that unscathed. You have too much confidence in your own ability to weed out influences that you can't even recognize. And so, yes, I there is no way that someone can practice yoga, even if they think they're doing hatha yoga, which is a spiritual practice, by the way, and escape idolatry, escape worshiping false gods.
Is there
even some of the postures are, many of the postures, in fact, symbolize worship of false gods, the sun god, different false deities.
Do you make any exception for, and in the Western culture, we have a tendency to do this a lot. Exercises that are not yoga per se, but are based upon the movements of yoga.
I am completely fine with stretch exercises. If somebody wants to take some stretch exercises that have been proven to be beneficial and remove it entirely from the yoga context, I don't have a problem with that. There's a woman by the name of Lorette, what's her last name? I'll think of it during the next break. I'll look it up. But she has developed something called Praise Moves, and she was a former yoga teacher. And so she has developed stretch exercises similar to many of the exercises in yoga, put them in a completely Christian context, and has different recordings, worship, and so forth that you do. It's a completely in a Christian context. It's not Christian yoga, which also exists, but it is her own taking of the stretch exercises and putting them in a different context. That is not problematic. It's not that stretch exercises per se are problematic. It's that yoga is problematic.
Elliot Miller is our guest. He's editor-in-chief of the Christian Research Journal. We're talking about in light of the San Diego judge's ruling in favor of public elementary school teaching yoga, we're talking about the worldview of yoga. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. Can you take us through, we talked about the sparse doctrinal content of Hinduism, but what is the doctrinal relationship between yoga and Hinduism? Can you explain it to us?
Yeah, yoga is the science of salvation. It is, you know, it literally means to yoke or to become one with God, and that is the aim of it. And so it is a discipline. It's based on a works system. Totally, you know, there is no grace, and even if there was, it's the wrong God. You know, within Hinduism, there is this complete, because of the belief in karma and reincarnation, you know, we all have to save ourselves. And we're all trapped in many reincarnations in an illusory world. And our problem is that we're identifying and we're connected with the material world and with the physical body and with our false ego that we have, where we think we are whoever, whatever our name is, who was born at a certain date. And we don't realize that we're truly one with everything and that we transcend our own finite identity. And so yoga is to get us out of this illusion. You know, it is to create an awareness of our oneness with God that already exists. And so it is a complete program of self-mastery, and that means mastering the body, mastering the mind, mastering the will, mastering the spirit. The goal ultimately is to raise the psychic energy known as the kundalini, represented by you know, the form of a serpent that is supposed to be sleeping at the base of the spine. And through the, as you go through the progressive spiritual disciplines of yoga, starting with the physical, but certainly not ending there, you begin to raise the kundalini, and you raise it up through the seven chakras, which are the psychic centers that represent different phases of life. And the higher the kundalini or the psychic energy, the prana, rises, the more spiritually enlightened you become. And ultimately it reaches the crown chakra, and at that point you become aware that you are God. And so, you know, there are, like I said, there are different religious beliefs in Hinduism. They're not all pantheism, which is the belief that I am God, you are God, this rock is God, the universe is God, all is God. But that is the form of Hinduism that is most often represented here in the West. And so, according to a pantheistic version of Hinduism, then, once you reach enlightenment, then you know that you are God, and then you can become free of the illusory power of the material world and begin to balance out your karma and eventually escape the cycle of reincarnation.
Elliot Miller is our guest. When we come back, we'll talk more about the worldview of yoga. He's editor-in-chief of the Christian Research Journal, author of a series on yoga for the Christian Research Journal. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. You will find links to the articles that I talked about there at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. We'll be right back.
South Africa,
China,
Germany,
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world?
India,
Sweden,
Egypt,
France,
Turkey,
Japan,
Australia,
Canada,
United Kingdom,
Hong Kong,
Austria,
Finland,
Malaysia,
Singapore,
Bulgaria,
Korea,
Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines,
Mexico,
Spain,
New Zealand,
Kuwait.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Hey, St. Louis, how would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line. Available 24/7. 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Folks, if you have a question or a comment or a personal story to tell about yoga, we're talking about the worldview of yoga with Elliot Miller of the Christian Research Journal. Give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon, July the 3rd. Elliot, once this, I guess you could talk about either kind of leaving the karmic cycle or being rid of all of your karmic debt with the exception of what you came in with. I guess that's always there. What happens next for the person in Hinduism, or at least what do they allege to happen next?
Well, it depends on the school of Hinduism that you're dealing with. But for many, they, especially here in the West, who are influenced by pantheism, and also many in India or in the East, there would be the belief that ultimately you lose your individuality altogether, like a drop of water dropping into the ocean and merging into the larger, endless ocean of being kind of thing.
So does that mean that when the person, I mean, to put it in kind of physical terms, when the person dies, they are no longer reincarnated? They are assumed into the unity of the universe or something like that?
Right. Once they've been truly saved, it's called moksha, which means deliverance, and that's the goal of Hindus, because they look at life, in the physical body and in the physical world as hell. Hell, for them, hell is this life. And for a lot of Hindus, a lot of people in India throughout the centuries, it's understandable why they would have a life and world denying view, because their experience often has been hellish, especially if they were in the lower castes of Hinduism, of India. And so the whole idea of just reincarnating again and again into a world of misery is not a desirable thing, as Western proponents of reincarnation, such as Shirley MacLaine and Oprah Winfrey, might have you believe. Shirley MacLaine glamorizes it in some of her books, but and even groups like the Unity School of Christianity have a much more rosy view of it. But really, the whole idea of reincarnation is, in the Hindu mind, classically, it's viewed in a manner equivalent to how Christians would view hell.
So they view this present life as the dilemma itself. This present life as we experience it is the dilemma man faces.
Right. We need to escape from continually being cycled back into this experience and escape. They believe that physical life, the physical world, is an illusion, and that there is a strong delusion attached with it, which causes us to desire things in this world, and this is the cause of our suffering. This is also advocated in Buddhism, which sprang out of Hinduism to begin with. And so you have this desire to escape the suffering of this world and to transcend to some view of life that is transhuman, that is without limits, that is without any personal identity, but with some kind of identification with the all. And so really it's a denial of there being any real purpose and value to being human and to being physical and to the physical world.
Do you think
it's predicated on those ideas, which is really antithetical. A lot of people that practice yoga or embrace Eastern ideas don't realize that what they're embracing undercuts their own beliefs about the value of human beings, the value of nature, their desire to preserve the environment. Physical things that they place value in are actually undercut by the teachings of Hinduism.
As a matter of kind of implication, or seeing the implications played out, is the evidence for that, the kind of what happens when a Hindu or Hindu-esque worldview prevails, exactly what we see in societies where Hinduism is the predominant, not just a religion, but it's the culture?
I think an argument can definitely be made for that. I mean, it was certainly only when Mahatma Gandhi read Jesus and read other outside Western writings, Thoreau, that he was motivated to do something to change the caste system and to liberate the untouchables. Within the Hindu system, everybody gets what they deserve. And so if you're born in the lower classes, this is what you deserve. And in fact, any effort to try to free you from your miserable estate would be to do you a disservice, because you need to pay for your bad karma before you can ascend upward and maybe in a future life be born in a higher caste. So, you know, according to that view, you don't have much incentive to change the social structure. Plus, you don't have much concern about, valuing and preserving the environment.
Herman is listening in Illinois. Thanks for waiting on the line, Herman.
Thank you. Yes, just ask a question. If, as these systems and those who propose them claim, that one is already a god, then why does one need to be enlightened?
Good
well,
question.
That is the great mystery within Hinduism, and I teach on worldviews, and one of the criteria that I teach we need to test worldviews by is consistency. Are they internally consistent? In other words, is everything coherent within the teaching, or is there something within it that is self-contradictory? And then are they externally consistent? In other words, do they fit history, science, and can we live consistently according to them in the real world? And Hinduism fails really on both of those tests. And one of the reasons it fails is because it is internally inconsistent. How is it if God is, I haven't gone so far as to describe the pantheistic view of God, but the pantheistic view of God is that he's pure awareness. Just an infinite sea of consciousness. So if God is pure awareness, how did he ever become ignorant enough to think he was you and me? You know, I mean, what occurred that disrupted his nature and accounts for this? And since, you know, in their efforts to try to explain this, they say, well, God was born out there in infinity. He was bored out there in infinity. He needed some entertainment, so he created this play called Lila, play where he divided himself up into all these souls and gave himself amnesia as to his true identity and went through all these, this transmigration, this progress from one lower life form to another form till he's finally human, and eventually he becomes a Hindu Brahmin, member of the Brahmin caste, who has enough leisure time to go out into the forest and study with a guru and become enlightened and realize he's God. You know, so the problem with that is that a God that needs to do all that is personal. A God who gets bored and requires play and so forth is not this impersonal cosmic consciousness, but is a personal being. So their view is self-contradictory. I mean, there are many fundamental problems with their basic view of how everything got started. But for them, it's not an issue because the whole idea of logic and critical analysis is on a lower level that needs to be transcended into the oneness. Logic requires duality, right and wrong, comparing different alternatives. But the whole point of enlightenment is to realize everything is one and there are no dualities. So, you know, if we're hung up on logic, it just means we're not enlightened.
Elliot, with only about 20 seconds here, tell us a little bit about the Christian Research Journal before we let you go.
Yes, the Christian Research Journal is published by the Christian Research Institute. It's a bimonthly magazine. It's we deal with issues of discernment and issues regarding the defense of the faith, and it's aimed at the layperson so that people who maybe haven't been to seminary, haven't been trained in apologetics, can take the research information and be able to use it. We deal with just about everything that's going on in the culture right now. And for more about it, you can go to www.equip.org. Right now, we have a special price on our subscription. It's normally $39.50 for a year subscription. Right now, we're offering it for $34.50. And the code for that is SUMMER, S-U-M-M-E-R. So if someone wants to use that, you can also call 800-2-JOURNAL, you know, the letters journal, and there will be somebody there to take your subscription request.
Elliot Miller is editor-in-chief of the Christian Research Journal and author of a series on yoga for the Christian Research Journal. We will have a link to the Christian Research Journal at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks, Elliot.
You're welcome.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to have Bill McKeever join us to respond to Mormons' questions. We'll have Dr. John Warwick Montgomery alongside to answer the one question, is the United States a Christian nation? Friday, we'll discuss the vocation of civil authorities and civilians, of citizens, with Pastor Peter Bender. And we'll also talk about the prophet Isaiah for an hour on Friday with Dr. Andy Bartelt of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.